All right, so let's get started.
Ready?
Yep. And we're holding about halfway down the wide line on Nunbei Gamal Alec. Line begins not tight. Okay, we discussed yesterday the machlokes of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva about at what point does an Avodah Zarah become also. We said Rabbi Shmuel says that a goy's Avodah Zarah becomes also immediately he makes it, a yid's only when he worships it, or the other way around. Rabbi Shmuel says a goy's when he worships it, a yid as soon as he makes it. Rabbi Akiva says the other way around. So now Rabbi Shmuel is going to take up a related question. Boy, Rav Hamnuna asked the following question. Rikech kli lavod is kechavim mahu. What if somebody reshaped a keli in four Avodah Zarah? So the scenario is, Ritzich Rashi explains is a process by which you have a metal keli, let's say, that has a hole in it. So what you do is you take it, you put it on an anvil or whatever, you bang on it with a hammer until the metal now becomes softened enough to fill up the original hole. It gets thinned out a little bit. That's called Ritzich. It's called that. It's different, for example, soldering would involve, let's say you take some other metal and weld it, or welding, whatever would involve, you put some other metal onto there instead. Here it's you're reshaping the actual metal itself. You're not adding anything extra. But yeah, the point is...
How'd you say that in English?
In English, I don't know what the word for it would be. You reshaped it, let's say. Anyway, the point is like this. You have, let's say, a keli that once upon a time was used for worshiping Avodah Zarah. Now it's broken. Now the person did this ritich for it, again, thinking of Avodah Zarah. Again, thinking that it's going to be used for Avodah Zarah.
If he didn't think of it.
So that's the point. The Maharam says the point like this, that given that it was Meshamshei Avodah Zarah, then if it broke by itself, then it wouldn't be bako anyway, because we said before that it breaks by itself. So it implies it had to be that the goy deliberately broke it. So therefore, the Gemara is going to later on take up the question, what's the din of it? If it was broken for the sake of Bittul, and the Yid didn't have in mind that he's now remaking it for the sake of Avodah Zarah, obviously it wouldn't be Tumah. Obviously it wouldn't have the Tumah of Avodah Zarah anymore. So the question, because it was already
bottled.
The question would be rather that you have to realize the Gemara is going to end up explaining what exactly the question is. Are we talking about does it become also right now on the spot? Or are we talking about a different concept called Tumah Yishana, which we're going to get to soon? In the end, the Gemara is going to say we're going to talk about Tumah Yishana. So therefore, the Maharam, we'll see. Well, it means that it gets back its original Tumah. We'll discuss it soon. But anyway, the point is, Maharam says that's why Rashi has to make a point of saying that he actually did the fixing of the keli for the sake of Avodah Zarah, because otherwise, of course it's not Tumah. Obviously, it became Bavah, of course. Okay. Anyway, so Ritzich Chli Lavod is Kechavim Ma. So you have to ask, the Gemara says, what's the question? Avodah Kechavim Deman. Let's figure out the scenario. Who did this Avodah Zarah belong to? Is it an Avodah Zarah that belonged to a goy, and you're talking about a keli that was used in the service of that Avodah Zarah? No. Well, then, the question is, whether we go according to Rabbi Shmuel, whether we go according to Rabbi Akiva, either way, this is not the actual Avodah Zarah. It's only a keli that was used to serve Avodah Zarah. And we said before in the previous Surya, both according to Rabbi Shmuel and according to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shmuel brought a pasuk. He brought some word that's called Makoimos that we said over there, that we learned from that. That's different from Tikrovis, right. Meshamshin and Tikrovis are two different things, right. So Rabbi Shmuel had brought before Pasuk to say that a goy's Avodah Zarah becomes also immediately and a Jew's Avodah Zarah only when it's worship. But when it comes to Meshamshin Avodah Zarah, both of them are going to agree that we're going to learn it from the Shamshi Avodah Zarah. It only becomes also when they actually worship it. Asher Ovdu, as the Pasuk says, it's called a Makanis Asher Ovdu. So it's only becoming going to become also. Rabbi Shmuel is the one who brought that limit. Even Rabbi Akiva, who disagrees with Rabbi Shmuel on the dinim, he has no reason to disagree with that particular limit. He said you don't apply it from Kalim to Avodah Zarah itself, but he agrees that it applies to Kalim. So whether we go according to Rabbi Shmuel, whether we go according to Rabbi Akiva, Meshamshei Avodah Zarah, either way these Kalim are only used to serve Avodah Zarah, or Meshamshei Avodah Zarah, Ein Aser, Ein Ashi Avdu. And Meshamshei Avodah Zarah only come also when they're actually worshipped. So So therefore, what's the question? At this point, you haven't actually used this fixed Kali in worship yet. So even you had in mind, like last
week. What do you mean when they worship? They don't worship.
When it's used in worship, that's what I meant. When it's used for worship of Avodah Zarah. So again, you have this Kali was used for Avodah Zarah. Now it's broken. Even the Yid is now making it, or even anybody, whatever, is now fixing it in honor of Avodah Zarah. Why would that make a difference? Both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva would agree it only becomes also the next time it's used. So what's Rav Hamnon's question? The El Aver is Kachavim Yisrael. So maybe then we have to be talking about that it was a Kali used in service of a Avodah Zarah that belonged to a Jew. Well, then we have to ask Alibu Deman. Well, then according to which man to Omar is Rav Hamnon asking this question? Ilema Alibu de Rav Akiva. Are you going to say he's asking according to Rav Akiva? Hello? Are you going to say he's asking according to Rav Akiva? That, well, then, of course, there's no question. Hashtahi gufa le mitzvah David. Rabbi Akiva holds even the Avodah Zarah itself only becomes also of a Yid, only becomes also once it's worshipped, because he learned it from the Samba Saucer, only when you do secret rites. That's the point. Rabbi Akiva says even the Avodah Zarah itself, how much more so the Meshamshim, Meshamshim Mekoya, how much more so would we need to say that the Meshamshim only become also when they're actually used in worship? So if Rabbi Nuna is asking according to Rabbi Akiva, what's the question? He knows perfectly well that Rabbi Akiva is only going to ask it once it's actually used for Avodah Zarah purposes.
Right.
The Ela Libid Rabbi Shmuel. So rather, okay, fine. We have to say that Rav Hamnuna is asking a question within Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. Now Rabbi Shmuel has said that a Jew's Avodah Zarah becomes also as soon as he makes it, because he learned it from Aror Isha Shayasa Petzal Masecha, that as soon as he makes it, or he learned it from Sila Elakehem, whatever, he learns it, that as soon as he makes it, then it immediately becomes also.
Rabbi Shmuel.
Well then, so the question now becomes, Mai, so then Domer Asuramiyad, so the question is Mai. So what would Rabbi Shmuel say about the Kalim? Mishamshin Gamrinin. Do we say we learn about the status of the Kalim for that a Mishamish and Avodah Zarah of a Yid? We learn those from the Mishamshin of the Avodah Zarah of a Goy. Therefore, Mahasamachi Avdu Apachachi Avdu. Just like by a Goy's Mishamshin, we said before that Shmuel learns from Avid to Abdin of Tomakoimet Tesha Avdu, that the Makoimet, meaning the Kalim, only become also when the Avdu, when they're actually used for worship. Abed to Abdon is with an Alice. That means to destroy.
Yeah.
When Asher Avdu Sham Hagoyim, only the Makomis, the places, or the Kalim rather, Asher Avdu, that they worship, meaning that they use for worship. In other words, before they use it for worship, Rabbi Shmuel says it's not also. So therefore, do we say by the same logic, the same thing would apply to the Avodah Zarah of a Yid, fine, he has a different pasuk, so to say that the Avodah Zarah of a Yid is different. But what about the Meshamshim? Do we say the Meshamshim of Avodah Zarah of a Yid are the same as the Meshamshim of the Avodah Zarah of a Goy? And therefore, they only become also when they're worshipped. So just like by the Goy, they only become also when they're actually used for worship. Maybe the same thing over here. Or maybe Rabbi Shmuel is going to learn the status of the Meshamshim of a Jew's Avodah Zarah from the Jew's actual Avodah Zarah itself. Instead of working across to the Goy's Meshamshim, we're going to work downward from the Yid's Meshamshim to the Yid's Avodah Zarah. Just like Rabbi Shmuel says, the Yid's Avodah Zarah becomes also as soon as it's made. So then the Meshamshim also right away. That would be Rav Hamnuna's question. Okay, the question with that is, if that's Rav Hamnuna's question, then my Ilya to come by Ritzichli. Then why is Rav Hamnuna bothering to ask the question specifically in the case where you had this Kali was previously used for Avodah Zarah? Then it was damaged. Then you started hammering on it in order to fix it. Why such a convoluted case? Tiboyle also, yeah, you should just have a simple case. You made a Kali for Avodah Zarah of a Yid. Does it become also right away or not, according to Rabbi Shmuel? The answer is, you're misunderstanding what Rav Hamnuna's question was. Rav Hamnuna has actually, his question is not about the question whether the Kali becomes also Bahanar. In the end, by the way, since the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, that a Jew's Avodah Zarah only becomes also when it's worshipped, and Rabbi Akiva also agrees with the Goyis of a Zarah that the Kalim only become also when they're worshipped, because again, he uses the same limud as Rabbi Shmuel from Eskolam HaKomet, then fine. The bottom line is, if whether the Kalim was made fresh, or whether it was ritzich, whether it was repaired in honor of a Zarah, either way, it'll only be also when it's actually used for worship. So therefore, so no, that's not really Rabbi Hamnuna's question. It's not about the question whether it's also or not. The question rather is, Rabbi Hamnuna Mishum Tumah Yishonah, come by light. Rabbi Hamnuna's question is regarding the issue of Tumah Yishonah. Tumah Yishana literally means the old Tumah.
How do we know that?
We have to, logically, Logically, the very fact that we see that Rav Amnuna is asking about a repaired keli rather than a new one makes us realize that he's not actually asking about the question whether it's also b'hanah as soon as it's made, because then he'll then fine. With a, yes, you might have a question according to Rabbi Shmuel, but okay, that's not his primary question. Because if all he meant to ask that, he would have asked what about a new keli. He's rather asking a whole different question. Given that this keli was originally used for avodah zarah and therefore it has a tumah d'rabbanan. Now that it was broken, and now that it was fixed, does it get back its tuma yishana? What is tuma yishana? So like this, it's now, we learn in the Mishnah in Kalim, claim matris, shukayan umkablayan tmein, when it comes to metal kalim, whether they're flat or whether they have a space inside them, so like whether they're flat like a table or whatever, or whether they're able to hold things inside them like a bowl or whatever. Either way, they're makabel tuma. Unlike, for example, wooden kalim, where flat wooden kalim are not makabel tuma. On the other hand, nishtabru taharu, if they break and therefore they're not usable for their original function anymore, then they become taharu even without being zipped in a mikveh or whatever. However, chazav asan kalim, however, if he took that broken metal and made it again into kalim, the din is yachzur l'tumah yishana. They go back to their original tumah. They regain their original tumah. That's the question, tumah v'tahara. Now why is there that concept? If midaraisa is taharu, why did the rabbanon declare it tumah? So Rashi refers to a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara refers to, among the Yud Ches Dover, the 18 Gzeres that the Shammai voted on and overruled Beis Hillel on, one of them is this concept of Tumah Yishana.
And even with fire?
Yeah, it doesn't matter how. So the Gemara explains over there what happened. What happened? You had there was a case like this. It happened once, the Gemara says, that Queen Shlomtia, the wife, widow, whatever, of Yana and Melech, one time was making a party. The kalim became tomei, and in those times when the mikvah is still standing, people are careful, even they're eating a cholin meal, to eat the tahara. So therefore they have a problem, all the kalim are tomei. They didn't want to have to delay the party in order to make all the kalim tahara, it's going to take time. Instead, she being the queen, she could afford it, she hires smiths to break the kalim and then remake them, like we're describing over here. It doesn't take as long. Like this, they could make a hole in each one of them, so it becomes no longer a kalim, and then hammer the whole clothes, like we're saying over here. Now, the problem with that is, so the Gemara discusses over there a couple of problems that could come from that, but the maskana of the Gemara over there is the problem is, what happens then, normally when a keli becomes tamei, even let's say it's not tamei mess, let's say it became tamei by touching a sheret or what have you, what happens? It has to be dipped in a mikveh, but besides that, you also have to have head of shemesh, you have to wait until tzeis ha-chachavim, and then it becomes, only then does it become fully tarot. Like this, what happens with this breaking them and remaking them? Minatoda, they would become immediately tarot. People may not realize, people are going to think to themselves, hey, we saw earlier today, we know these kalim were tamei. Now, all of a sudden, later in the day, we see these very same kalim are tamei. Head of shemesh apparently isn't an important thing. It's not going to occur to them to realize the difference between whether they were dipped in a mikveh versus whether they were broken and then fixed.
They wouldn't see that they were broken?
They wouldn't necessarily realize. They wouldn't necessarily notice that detail. I'm sure also she had expert smiths over there that could make them look like they did originally. Whatever, the point still remains. Therefore, the Chachamim made the sakana of tumah yishana when it comes to metal kalim. So now the question becomes the Hakha Kama Bailey. So now we understand Rav Hamlana's question. Ki hadra tuma, when we say that midrabbanon you have this tuma yishana, that the original tuma returns to the kalim, and therefore that has to be dipped in the mikveh or whatever. What do we say? Hanimilu tuma daraisa. Do we say that only applies to tuma daraisa? For example, the kalim became tuma by touching a sheret or what have you. Aval tuma dirabbanon loy. Maybe it doesn't apply where the whole tuma is only dirabbanon, and the whole tuma of avodah zarah is only dirabbanon. Even though we have psukim for it, it's only an asmasta. The whole concept that avodah zarah and meshamshim and what have you are tuma is only midrabbanon. So therefore, maybe it doesn't apply.
The topic of
tumah yishana. Yeah. So that's the question. Or maybe it doesn't make a difference. Maybe the Chachamim made the gzera of tumah yishana even when the original tumah was only derabanan, like in this case. Okay, so the Gemara says still, v'tiboyle shau tumah derabanan. In that case, still, why is Rav Nuna talking about this unusual case where you have kalim of avodah zarah that were broken and then were fixed? And if you're asking about tumah derabanan in general, then let him ask more generally. Let him phrase the question more generally. Any keli that became tomei in a drabbanon way, and you have other ways that a metal keli can become tomei drabbanon. Rashi gives an example. Let's say, for example, in most cases where keli becomes tomei because it's liquids, is only midrabbanon. Midoraisa, the only kind of liquids that can make a keli tame are, for example, the spit of a zav or other of a zava or whatever, or other certain other bodily fluids that come out of them. Spit, urine, a number of other things, whatever. The point is, those are an avatoma daraisa. Those will make kalim tome on a daraisa level. Other than that, though, in general, when we talk about a concept that you have tome liquids, liquids, for example, that are a rishin or a sheni latoma, and they touch, that they can become a rishin is daraisa, but that they can make a keli tome is only jirabam. So Rav Nuna wants to know whether the concept of Tumah Yeshana applies to Tumah Derabanan. Why is he mentioning only this case of fixing a keli for Avodah Zarah? Let him ask a more general question. A keli became Tameh with Mashkin, for example, which is only Derabanan, and you broke it, and then you and now you're hammering it back together. Does it still have a Tumah Yeshana? Tosfos, by the way, points out, now, when it comes to, for example, you have certain kinds of kelim that the whole concept of them becoming Tameh is Derabanan. Specifically glass kelim. Midaraisa, glass can't become tame. Midrabanan, the Rabbanan extended said the concept that glass kelim are able to be makabel tuma. Now with those we don't have this concept of tuma yeshana. We know for sure the Chachamim did not apply the concept of tuma yeshana to kelim such as glass, where the whole concept that they can be chlal become tame is only the Rabbanan. Here we're talking about metal kelim, which are capable of becoming tumah daraisa, but here we're talking about the specific tumah, such as avodah zarah or such as mashkin or whatever, is only derabanan. The specific source of tumah is only derabanan. That's the question. So anyway, so why is Rav Nuna only asking the case of avodah zarah rather than more generally about other sources of tumah derabanan? The answer is you're right. Actually, Rav Nuna is asking one question that then leads to another question. So he's only explicitly mentioning one question, but he actually means both them.
Because he doesn't.
He only mentions the second question, and we can deduce from that his first question. The question is, therefore, Tumah Derabanan Mihadra Elahadra. First of all, does this concept of Tumah Yeshana apply to a Tumah Derabanan or only to a Tumah Deraisa? And Imtim Salema Loihadra Tumah, if you're going to say that in general it does not, for example, again, if Kaylee became Tumah with Mashkin, with liquids or whatever that are not liquids from a Zav or whatever, then yes, if you break it and then fix it, it will not go back to its original Tumah. We're going to argue maybe the Chachamim did not apply the Tumah in that case. What about Tumah Daberdis Kechavim? What about the Tumah of Avodah Zarah? Do we say Mishum Chumra Daberdis Kechavim, given the severity of Avodah Zarah, that we want to take all steps to stay as far away possible from it as possible? Mishavir Rabbanan Tumah Daraisa. Therefore, did Rabbanan give it the severity of Tumah Daraisa and say that Tumah Yeshana will apply to it? Or lawyer, maybe not. And the answer is, hey, we don't know, and therefore it's a suffix whether they have the original Tumah. So as usual, when you do with a suffix, you have to be machmer to be on the safe side. Okay. Another question. Now what happens? Let's go back to tikrovis, food that was offered to Avodah Zarah. We know we said before it's also bahana. We also know we said before you can't be mevatel. The question is that maybe bittul helps to a limited extent. Again, tikrovis is going to be the tamei, just like the Avodah Zarah itself, and just like the mishamshim, just like the kalim used in its service, midrabon and all. But can the status of tikrovis as far as tumah v'tahara be removed in a certain way? What would be the din as far as tekroivus of food that was offered to Avodah Zarah? What would be the din? Mi mahan yalahu bitul l'tarunu mitruma eloi. It's true, bitul, of course, is not going to help to make them mutter bahana. They're going to remain also bahana, as we said a couple of blocks ago. But can bitul at least help if you mevatel the food itself, or you mevatel the Avodah Zarah as a whole, whatever, can that at least help that now they're not matam, that now they're not matam imidraba? Okay.
It's a way of asking what's the degree of tumah.
Yeah, well, no, we know what the degree of tumah is. We have a machlokas panoyim about it. We had a machlokas panoyim before. We had Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira saying that the tikrovis is metama like a mess. We had opinions that it's metama like a sheret or like a nidra or whatever. So the question is not the degree of tumah. The question is it possible to remove that tumah by being mevatel? It'll still be also b'ana, for sure. It'll still have to be ground up and burnt and whatever, but at least maybe it's not metama anymore. Okay, so again, the question is, why is Rabbi Yochanan asking specifically about that case? The kibolik kalim. Why doesn't he instead ask about kalim that we use to, so Rashi learns when we ask about kalim, we're going back to the previous discussion about kalim that we used in the service of Avodah Zarah. Mishamshin, not sekrovis, but kalim. Tosfos at the top of the next Amud talks about that maybe actually what the Gemara means is kelim that we use for tekroiv.
Why would it be more appropriate to talk about kelim rather than?
Because you could ask the same question. Kelim that we use for avodah zarah, we discussed before that they are metame. So instead of asking specifically about oichlim, specifically about food, you might as well ask more generally about kelim. Ask whether being mavatal takes away their so that's the thing that Tosfos says is that the we're talking if we're talking about kelim that are tekroivus, then we have under the circumstances under which kelim can be tekroivus, as we talked about before, then you have a stronger question in a way that again it's tekroivus on the face of it shouldn't be bottle, but we established before there is maybe a way of making them tar. Does that apply though if you're mavatal then? Okay, so the answer is kelim lo kamei bayim lei. Yes, but Rabbi Yochanan has no reason to ask about kelim because the fact is, given the isur tara b'mikvah, given that kelim are able to be made tahor like any other tumah by dipping them in a mikvah. Now over here, what's the mikvah? The mikvah for such kelim is being mevatel then. So therefore, obviously tumah nami batla. Obviously, just like any keli can be dipped in a mikvah and no longer be tamei, the same way over here, of course, you can be mevatel the keli, mevatel the avodah zarah, and the keli goes along with it, and then of course the tumah goes away. That's not the question. Rather, the question is about food. Food, when it becomes tamei, can't be dipped in a mikvah. So therefore, in other words, if food becomes tamei in any other way, forget about a zav. Food becomes tamei by touching a sheret, or by touching a zav, or whatever, what happens. That's it. It's tamei forever. There's nothing you can do with it. So now the question becomes, mela kalim. We know kalim can become tahar by dipping in a mikvah. Therefore, we can figure by the same logic, they can become tahar by being revival then. Whether they were tekroivus like Tosfos or Mishamshim like Rashi. But the question is on food. Given that food in general has no way of becoming tahor, what about when it comes to avodah zarah? Maybe do we say in that case, then that's it, Bissel doesn't help for them at all, just as a mikvah wouldn't help for them, or maybe it's different. That's Rabbi Yochanan's question. Okay, still the Gemara asks, Gufa. Fine, but still, why doesn't he ask about, instead of asking about food that was offered to an avodah zarah, how about let him ask about an avodah zarah itself that's made out of food? For example, Rashi says, let's say a person bowed down to a loaf of bread. You could ask the same question. If now, later on, you're mavatal with avodah zarah, is it no longer mechamic? The answer is avodah zarah gufa le mibayle. No, Rabbi Yochanan has no reason to ask about the avodah zarah itself. Again, given that the avodah zarah is able to become, the issur is completely able to go away, that we have the whole concept of bittul of avodah zarah that we talked about before and we're going to talk about later on. It is possible you have an object that was worshipped, as obviously a goy, and only a goy can be mevatel, but you do have the concept that an avodah zarah is capable of being this bittul and then being mutar b'hanah. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan knows, obviously, tumah nami batla. There's no question, therefore, even this particular avodah zarah is not the kind of thing that could be dipped in a mikvah, because it's food, for example. Nevertheless, there's no question it can become batla from tumah the same way as it can be batla from issur.
Because it's avodah zarah itself.
That is why Rabbi Yochanan's question is specifically about tekroivus of food, because food, again, the issur never goes away. Given that the Isser of Tekroivet never goes away, even if you mevatel the Avodah Zarah, even if you mevatel the Tekroivet, nevertheless, it still remains Osabana, for the reason that Rav Gidl said a couple of blocks ago, that we said that the Pasuk makes a hekesh between Tekroivet and a mess. So a mess is Osabana, and there's no way of making Mutabana. Therefore, Tekroivet is the same thing. And we talked over there about the various logical reasons that the Rishonim and Akronim give. Why should Tekroivet be stronger than Avodah Zarah? We talked about because Tekroivet is no minimum size for, and because Tekroivet is offered to the actual being itself that they're worshipping, as opposed to the statue is only, this is Marshall's reason, the statue is only meant to be a representation of it,
of the
actual being that they're worshipping, or the actual, yeah. So whatever it is, so therefore, sort of Gidol established over there that Tekroivet is never bottle. Therefore, you could argue Tumanami Le Bakla. Therefore, you could argue the Bittul has no effect on it at all. It doesn't take away the Issu, therefore it doesn't take away the Tumma either. Or Juma Issu Daraisa Le Bakla, Tumma the Dabon and Bakla. Or maybe not. Maybe the Issu Daraisa indeed is not able to be Bakla because of Rav Gidl's Drasha. But maybe the Tumma that was only imposed to begin with Dabonon is maybe could be Bakla by being Mabakla. So So that's Rabbi Yochanan's question. And again, the answer is Teku. We're not sure whether it's still Mechamer or not.
And
we have to be Mechamer. Actually, maybe not. I mean, because it's only a Tumah D'Rabbanan. In general, with Sveik is D'Rabbanan, we're Mekel. So maybe we are Mekel in this case. Yeah, because again, the usual rule is a Sofet D'Raisa is L'Chumra and a Sofet D'Rabbanan is L'Kola. So, let's see. In Hilchot Shor of Satumas, Perek Vav, Halacha Zayim, let's see. To create it, just sofik l'truma that Amram says. It's a sofik whether it's tummy. So I guess it means that we do have to be master. I don't know.
Okay.
It sounds like we're saying it's sofik l'truma. I guess it means. I don't know. Okay. All right. Fine. Bominei Rav Yosef ben Shlomo Ren. Now a somewhat related question. Since we were talking about kalim that were used in the worship of Avodah Zarah, now we have a related question. Now, as background, the Gemara is going to mention over here Beis Chonya. So we need to know a little bit about that Beis Chonya. The story the Gemara tells in the last Mishnah of Menachos, the next to last Mishnah of Menachos, mentions Beis Chonya, and the Gemara expands on the story. The gist of it is that Chonya was one of the sons of Shimon HaTzadik. He was jealous of his brother who was the Kohen Gadol. A whole thing developed over there. We'll learn it in Menachos. We'll learn it to Kislev next year, Beis Hashem. And the gist of it is that Chonya ran away to Mitzrayim and built a replica of the Beis Hamikdash over there and made it a place to bring korbanos. Now, the Gemara discusses over there, and the Gemara is going to discuss over here, the basic question, first of all, is, was it a place that where they actually worshipped Avodah Zarah? Is it a base of Avodah Zarah like any other in the world? Or is it a place where the sacrifices were actually meant in Hashem for Hashem, but never it's still also because the Beis Hamikdash existed in Yerushalayim, and ever since the first Beis Hamikdash was built, Bomer is also anywhere else in the world, so this would just be another Bomer. Once the first Beis Hamikdash was built, it's never Bomer. So that's one. Then it's a machlokes. Was it Avodah Zarah, or was it Avodah Zarah, or was it not Avodah Zarah? It was L'shem Shemayim, but it's still also because it's Shchut Eichut. And actually, either way, it's also. The question is it also as a Avodah Zarah? And we're going to see it in the Gemara. There's a Nafka Minah between them. No. According to the opinion that it was L'shem Avodah Zarah, the point is that once Chonya built this thing, then they started worshipping other gods over there. They said, whatever, Egyptian or whatever it is, gods over there. He didn't build it in honor of Hashem. He built it as a rival to the Beis Hamikdash, because that's the whole point. He was jealous of his brother who was the Kohen Gadol. But one way of looking at it is he actually set it up as a place intending for them to worship Avodah Zarah there in Mitzrayim. The other opinion is that he meant it, L'shem Shemayim, he meant that people should come there and bring korbanos to Hashem. Instead of going to Yerushalayim, they should bring korbanos over here. So the place is called Beis Chonya. And actually, some of the Mepharshim explain that maybe Chonya is for, he knew the halacha, he knew perfectly well, it says in the Torah, that you're not allowed to bring korbanos outside of Beis Hamikdash. So how could he even think to make a place to bring korbanos outside of Beis Hamikdash? So some of the Mepharshim explain, actually the Rambam explains, for example, that he didn't make it for Jews to bring korbanos over there. He made it for Goyim to bring korbanos over there. And then you have the question whether it was L'shem Avodah Zarah or L'shem Shemayim. But even if it's L'shem Shemayim, his mistake was, you're allowed to tell Goyim the din and to explain to them how to go about bringing korbanos outside of Beis Hamikdash, but you're not allowed to actually help them with it. Here, by building this place and having his koyanim over there assisting them, that part is definitely awesome.
They could theoretically...
In principle, even nowadays, a goy can build a mizbeach anywhere in the world he wants and bring a korban to Hashem, even in the time of the Beis Hamikdash standing, and we are allowed to give him instructions, we're allowed to tell him this is how you should build your mizbeach, this is how you should check the animal, etc. The Gemara, in fact, tells us in Zvachim that there was one time the queen of Persia, Ifra Hormuz, one time sends an animal to Rava telling him to bring it to the korban, and then the Gemara describes over there how Rava gave instructions to get a couple of Goyish boys and appoint them as priests for this purpose to be able to bring this korban. So you're allowed to do that, but you're not allowed to actually help them. So according to that, the Rambam says, Chonya's mistake, then, even if we say the place was L'shem Shemayim, he's not allowed to be helping Goyim physically bring korbanos. He can give them instructions, but not actually help them. Anyway, so, Rav Yosef ben Shaul Mirevi. So Rav Yosef ben Shaul asks Rebbe the following question. Kalim Shishim Shubahem Beis Chonya, what kalim that we use to worship in Beis Chonya, so like, for example, basins that we use to catch the blood of korbanos or whatever, Maushi Shtam Shubahem Beis Mikdash. Are you allowed to later on use those kalim in the real Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim? So now the question is: the Kamed Boyle Alibadim Ander Omer Beis Chonya Lav Beis Avodas Kachol. Now, the question of Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul has to be, according to the opinion, that Beis Chonya is not considered a place of Avodah Zarah. Because if it's a place of Avodah Zarah, obviously there's no question. We talked about before in the previous perek that anything that was used for Avodah Zarah, even if it's a situation where a hedyot is allowed to use it, you have a situation where it never became also in the first place, or in the Sbasal afterwards, it's disgusting to use it in the service of Hashem. So we know that. But if we argue that Beis Chonya is not a base of Avodah Kochavim, then you have the question. What's the question? You want to ask him?
He didn't think you built something, a house, and someone sold a church.
Yeah. Fine. The point is that later on, when we discuss the dinim of Beis Chonya, fine, maybe you're right. Maybe it didn't have to be that Chonya originally set it up the same of a desire. Maybe it turned later on into a place of a desire. The point is, the Gemara has that discussion in Menachos, was it ever a base of a desire or not? And you have a Mishnah there in Menachos that says, Koyanim sheshim shu b'beis Chonya, lo yisham shu b'mikdash shu b'yishlayim, Koyanim who served in this Beis Chonya are not allowed to ever serve in the Beis Mikdash in Yerushalayim. The Enet Tzarech Loim El Javah, needless to say, if they ever did another thing, meaning actual Avodah Zarah, then for sure we have an actual, we have a pasuk in the Navi Yechezkel that says that a Koyan that worshipped Avodah Zarah is never allowed to serve again in the Beis Mikdash. He's considered like a Baal Mor. He's still a Kohen for all other purposes. In fact, by the way, it mentions in Shulchan Aruch that he's even, once he did Shuvah, he's even allowed to do it. He's still a full-fledged Kohen. However, he's not allowed to serve in the Beis Mikdash if he worshipped Avodah Zarah. So we're saying the Chachamim further out of the Knaf, even if he served in Beis Chonya, which even if we argue that Beis Chonya is not a place of Avodah Zarah, nevertheless the Chachamim canceled him and forbade him to serve in the Beis Mikdash. The Rambam writes that if he was an Ovid Avodah Zarah, then it would be possible. But Shuvah is very nice. But first, he's still possible. A Baal Mum can also do Shuvah, but he's still a Baal Mum. Yes, the Mum still stays on him. Effectively, yes. So therefore, now the question becomes, Koyanim who would consider Rabbanim, Meshum the Bnei Deyaninu, do we say that only Koyanim are Osir if they served in Beis Chonya? Again, Beis Chonya, let's assume, is not a base of a desarta. They didn't actually worship of a desarta there, but they were over on Shchotei Chut. They were over on that they're not allowed to bring Korbanos outside of Beis Mikdash. Therefore, we're saying the Chachamim canceled them because they should have known better. Well, the question is, does that only apply to Koyanim? Because they're Bnei Deya, they should have known better. Aval Kalim, they're not sentient. They didn't have no choice to be used in Beis Chonya. Maybe the Chacham did not count for them. Maybe there's no difference. Maybe just like Koyanim who served there are off limits to the Beis Mikdash, maybe Kalim also. That's Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul's question. Amalei, the Rebbe answers him, Asurim heim umikra hoya v'yadeinu l'shachnuhu. He says it is also to use it over there. We do say that whatever applies to Koyanim applies to Kalim. And we had a I knew a pasuk to this effect that proves the point.
Be considered in a way, that's Kalim in a way.
No, but they're not. The fact
they're
is
not Kalim.
No, but okay, the point is, we're saying like this. The Koyanim who worshipped Avodah Zarah are also Midaraisa. It's actually a local Moshe Sinai that was first written down by the Chesed. Koyanim who served in Beis Chonya are also by a Knas de Rabban. So the question is, Kalim that we use to Avodah Zarah again are also Zaraisa because they're Mos. The question is, if they were used in Beis Chonya, so Rebbe is saying, yes, the same thing applies. The same thing that the Chachamim said, Koyanim who served in Beis Chonya cannot serve in the Beis Mikdash. The same way Kalim that we used in Beis Chonya cannot be used in the Beis Mikdash. The same Knas applies to them. Umikra hoya v'yadeinu shachnohu. Now we had a pasuk in our hands. I knew of a pasuk that proves this point, but I've forgotten what pasuk it is. Well, we'll have to see. Eisei, so Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul asks Rebbe, I have a contradiction. I'll bring you a pasuk that seems to show that you are allowed to use them. The pasuk described in Divrei Hayomim describes how when Chizkiyahu became king, now this is in the time of the first Beis Mikdash, now his father Ahaz had been an Ovid Avodah Zarah, and he desecrated the entire Beis Mikdash and used it for Avodah Zarah rituals. So then as soon as Chizkiyahu became king, they had to start the job of cleaning out and being metahar of the Beis Mikdash. And the Yerushalmi, in fact, mentions, actually based on a pasuk over there, that it was so bad there were even Avodah Zarah carvings on the walls, and it took them a couple of weeks to scrape them all off. The pasuk says they started Rosh Chodesh Nissan, and it took them till what? This is the first Beis Mikdash, yeah. Yeah. How did Avodah Zarah get in? People brought in Avodah Zarah at the times of Ahaz. So Achaz was the beginning, really, of a whole downward spiral that we learned about Sanhedrin. We learned about a whole thing. There was Achaz later on. Okay, there was Chizkiyahu was a tzaddik. After that, Menashe, then Amon, then Yoyakim. There was a downward progression over there in the last 100-odd years. In the last 100-150 years or so of the first Beis HaMikdash, where it was getting worse and worse as far as Avodah Zarah being brought into the Beis HaMikdash. One thing you got to realize, by the way, I mean, I don't want to get too far off topic over here, but one thing you got to realize, in the times of Achaz, while he was king, were the times when the Golos of the Aseret HaShvatim first started. The Golos of the Aseret HaShvatim took place in three waves. The first couple of them took place in Achaz's time. The last one took place already after he was dead and Chizkiyahu was king. You have to realize the same way as nowadays, you know, the same way as... No, Achaz was the king of Yehuda. We're talking about the kings of Yisrael, but it still happened in his time. He's seeing that Jews are being taken away from Eretz Yisrael and taken into Golos. When you think about it, the same way as, for example, you know, you have now 70-odd years since the end of the Holocaust, and you have, from then until now, you have people whose emunah sometimes is weaker because how could Hashem allow it to happen or whatever. You have to imagine. Now, it's easy to imagine. That's Achaz probably... And then people in his time felt much the same way. Yes, maybe they were doing Avedis. Yes, the Nevi'im were constantly warning them, but that it should actually happen, that Goyim are taking them away into Golos. It means maybe that, whatever. The point still remains that maybe that kind of thing maybe had an effect on him. Whatever, the point is that's what happened. Without getting into why it happened, the point is it did happen, that in Achaz's reign, he ruled for 16 years, the Beis HaMikdash was desecrated and filled with Avedis. So now Achaz finally dies, Chizkiyahu takes over, and they start cleaning out, and they start reversing that, and they start cleaning out the Beis HaMikdash. So they come and report to Chizkiyahu as follows. The Pasuk says, as the previous Pasuk says, that they tell him, we worked on being Makaher, the Beis HaMikdash, the Mizbeach, the Shulchan, etc. And then they continue, Kol HaKelim Asher Hiz Niach Melech Achaz Ma'achot. So all the Kelim that Achaz, that his niach literally means like he made them abandoned. But it doesn't mean like he abandoned them, like he set them aside. It means actually that he used them for Avodah Zarah worship. So kol ha-kelim asher his niach ha-melech Achaz ma'achosei b'maloi, all the kelim that Achaz, the king Achaz, used wrongly, b'maloi, that he misused them during his kingship, hechanu v'hikdashnu, we have prepared them and we have made them holy. So that's the question. My lab, hechanu da'apelivu. The chord of the word hechanu means we toivled them to get rid of the tumah of Avodah Zarah, that they had been used to worship Avodah Zarah. And hikdashnu means da'akdashninu. And hikdashnu means we re-sanctified them by reapplying Shemin HaMishcha to them. So there you go then. So what's the verb? Since they belong to Hekdash, they don't belong personally to Achaz, therefore the usual rule, ein adam osa java she'ena shaloi, applies. A person cannot ask for something that doesn't belong to him. Therefore, Achaz using, which would be the case over here, therefore Achaz using them for Avodah Zarah cannot prevent them from being used in the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore we see that the concept of Kalim being possible, even though when they were used for Avodah Zarah, but not in a way that actually makes them osir, doesn't make them possible to use in the Beis HaMikdash. By the same logic, Kalim from Beis Chonya, once obviously, but say by the same logic, Kalim from Beis Chonya, which Beis Chonya is not a place of Avodah Zarah, by the same logic, why should they be osir? What are you telling me, Rebbe, that it's osir? I have a pasuk that shows the opposite.
That was the first Beis
HaMikdash. That was the first, yeah.
Beis Chonya, he didn't keep the thing that shouldn't make bummers.
Right, obviously he was over on the issue of bummers, that's the point. Well, that's the thing. The Gemara discusses in Menachos. It may have been a Beis Avodah Zarah. The Mishnah there that we quoted a few lines ago that said, Kohenim who served in Beis Chonya cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash, and how much more so if they serve Gavah Achah Avodah Zarah. That Mishnah is obviously making the distinction that Beis Chonya is not a Beis Avodah Zarah. It's actually a machlok that says between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir whether it was or not. Our Gemara is following the opinion that it's not, which then the Mishnah in Menachos there is also following that opinion. So the point, though, is...
But even if it was...
No. Again, if the Kalim belonged to Achaz, obviously there's no question they're also to be used for the Avodah. The whole point is, why would they be Mutter? Because they could never become also by Achaz using them for Avodah Zarah, because they didn't belong to him. Adonim Oysa Dava She'ena Shaloi. And we still don't say that, nevertheless, even though it's true they're technically not also, nevertheless, we're still going to say they're most the Gavoya, because they're Kalim, after all. It's not like they had a choice. So we're not going to extend the din any further than it is Daraisa. Well, by the same logic, Kalim that we use in Beis Chonya are not also for the Beis Mikdash Daraisa. The most they can be also is only Darabanan. So on the face of it, then they shouldn't be also. What are you telling me, Rebbe, that they're also? Amalei, so Rebbe answers him, Baruch Atah L'Shamayim Shechzat Shali Avedasi. You should be blessed by Hashem that you returned me my lost object. That pasuk that you quoted, that is the pasuk that I was thinking of that I had forgotten. Because you're not understanding the pasuk correctly. What does it mean, hechanu? What does it mean when they say we prepared the kelim? It means shegnaznu. It means that we took those kelim that had been used to avodah zarah by achaz and we hid them away. Because they're also ba'anah. And what does it mean, vehikdashnu? It means shehikdashnu achedem tachteyem. We took other kelim and made them holy instead of the original one. So therefore, that's the difference. Therefore, it means the original kelim are osir. Even though technically they should not be osir, midaraisa, because again, einonim osir java shena shaloi, nevertheless, they did extend the din d'rabbanon to make them osir.
Not
daraisa, but d'rabbanon. And therefore, we see by the same logic, kelim from Beis Chonya can also be osir on that same d'rabbanon level.
The gzera was made already?
Apparently, yeah. But and actually, the Tertus Chaim asked the question. He says, how does Rebbe know that's the correct explanation of the pasuk? The fact of the matter is, it sounds like hechanu means we tovel them, and hechdashnu means we applied shemen and mishpah. How does Rebbe know it's different? He says, because the previous pasuk says that they said that we were mekaher the kelim of the Bishan English. All of a sudden, this pasuk uses a different expression, hechanu v'hechdashnu. So obviously, the difference is, hechanu means the things that were not, that all the problem was with them with tumor. They weren't actually used to serve Avodah Zarah, they just touched things of Avodah Zarah or whatever. Here we're talking about this pasuk, it's talking about things that were actually used to serve Avodah Zarah. So that's the difference. Okay.
Who said that?
That's the Tertus Chaim says that. Okay. So then says, Lema Messiah, fine. Can we say that Rebbe's position is supported by the following Mishnah? A Mishnah says in the Sefer Talmud, in the Sefer Midas rather, describing over there the structure of the second Beit Hamikdash. We know in the second Beit Hamikdash, in both Beit Hamikdash, I guess, there was a chamber called Lishkat Beit HaMoked. It's a big chamber where they had a fire burning in the middle over there to warm up the Kohanim, because the Kohanim walked around barefoot, and especially during the winter, they needed something to warm themselves up. There were, in the corners of it, there were four little chambers, each of which served a purpose, and one of them is Mizrachit Tzoynes, the northeastern chamber inside the Beis HaMikdash. That is where the family of the Chashmonoim stored away the stones of the Mizbeach that the people of Yavon, the Yavonim, when they entered the Beis HaMikdash, made them disgusting. And what does it mean, made them disgusting? It means they made them disgusting by worship, by using them to worship Avodah Zarah. They went and worshipped Avodah Zarah on the Mizbeach. And the point is, the Mishnah is saying they couldn't just reuse those stones; they had to actually hide them away.
So they took them. That's what I said the other day. They took them away.
And rebuilt the new mizbeach. The point being, in other words, on the face of it, according to Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul's position, again, the Goyim did not own these stones. They shouldn't have the ability to ask for them. Therefore, they should have been able to keep these stones in place and fix anything on the Mizbeach that was broken and redo it, only according to Rebbe's position, that he says, just like with Achaz of times, they had to store away the kelim that we used to Avodah Zarah, here also they had to store away these stones, so this Mishnah seems to support Rebbe's position. The answer is the Gemara says not necessarily, because Amar Papa, Hosam Kro Ashkach V'Darash, that's a special case, because in that case, they found a pasuk to Darshan to say that these stones actually are considered to be under the ownership of the Goyim at the time that they started using them for Avodah Zarah.
Why
is that? Because you have a pasuk in Yechezkel, Uvo Baparitzim B'chilaluha. The pasuk said, he's giving Nevuah, that the Beit Hamikdash is going to be destroyed, and the expression he uses, Uvo Baparitzim, wild people, undisciplined people are going to come in there, meaning the Goyim, B'chilaluha, and they will desecrate it. In other words, no, but the point is, the word B'chilaluha is Melashon Chulin. As soon as the Goyim came into the Beit Hamikdash and took it over, everything in it becomes Chulin now. Well, therefore, in other words, it becomes Hester. The Goyim are now able to actually acquire it. They're actually able to... In other words, it's no longer under the possession of Hektish. It becomes Hector. It goes out of the possession of Hektish, and now the Goyim are able to acquire it. So when they use this Mizbeach to worship the Avodah Zarah on it, it actually, at that point, it was theirs. And of course, if it's theirs, of course, it's also to use in the Beit Hamikdash. Everybody agrees to that, even Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul. His question was about things that don't belong to them, but here the stones actually belong to them at that point. That's not the point. Well, they were koneh at the chazaka. They were koneh because they entered the Beit Hamikdash, and as soon as they entered the Beit Hamikdash and they took it over, then that's it. Everything. Yeah, but that we have a gzeiras hakosu that works. Now, the point is, though, it does not work with Jews who worship Avodah Zarah. That's why it didn't work with Achaz. With Achaz, it wouldn't work with Jews.
If Jews enter the Beit Hamikdash
and start worshiping Avodah Zarah in there, that does not make it holy. That does not make it really. And that's why we're saying, therefore, in other words, Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul argued that the Kalim should not be Osir. And Rebbe tells him the only reason they're Osir is because of Zera Dirabon. You're right, Midaraisa, so they ought not to be Osir. Here we're talking about the stones of the Mizraach would actually be also on the Daraisa level. Because it's a Goyim, and that's different. The Baal HaMor actually has a different shit on it. The Baal HaMor is... Because the difference is, because the Pasuk is saying, with all the Christians of Chilul, the Pasuk is talking about the Goyim will enter the Beit Mikdash, therefore we have no source to say that. Right, exactly. The Baal HaMor has a bit of a different shita, and if the Baal HaMor's shita is that actually what it is the Purim over here, he says, are Jews. You had, in general, whenever the Goyim took over the Beit Mikdash, like in the times of the Greeks and later on in the times of the Romans, very commonly you'd first have renegade Jews coming in first, Yavnim or whatever, and therefore they would be the ones, effectively, who are committing the Ila, and they would be the ones who are committing the Ila, and the Ila, once the thing is misused for Chulin purposes, it becomes Chulin, and therefore now the Goyim are actually able to take ownership of it. He distinguishes, the Baal HaMor distinguishes, though, between the Kalim and the Mizbeach. He says that's the difference, that's why the Kalim, we can say, become in their possession, and therefore they become also, whereas the Mizbeach not. And then, therefore, or the other way around. The Kalim don't become in their possession, the Mizbeach does. Whatever, I don't remember the exact,
One way or another.
Anyway. Okay, so that's why. So that's a special case then. The stones of that Mizbeach actually became literally completely also banon, not only on a Derabbanan level, but even on a Deraisa level, because at that point they belonged to the Goyim. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to digress. They were hidden in one of those chambers of the Beit Mikdash. What happens? I mean, now that Yerushalayim, old Yerushalayim is full of stones. You have thousands of stones all over the place. You can't recognize one stone from another.
You
wouldn't necessarily know.
It was not special type of stone.
Well, so we're going to see in a second. One second. Amri, so now the Gemara digresses a second to talk about, why did the Beis Hashmonaim have to hide away these stones? Why couldn't they reuse them to rebuild the Mizbeach? Amri, so they said to themselves, Hechi Nevid, what should we do? Given that these stones now belong to the Goyim, and therefore they became Osir because they were used in service of Avodah Zarah. So how should we do to make them Mutter again? Nitbirinu, should we break them into smaller stones, have a Goy break them into smaller stones, and that will be Bittul? The problem is...
Like when you destroys another...
Yeah, exactly. The problem is Avonim Shlemeth Arachman. The Torah says the Mizbeach has to be built out of whole stones that have no notches in them. Now, if you break stones, inevitably there's going to be notches, there's going to be irregularities in them. Yeah. Okay, Ninsirinu, should we say, fine, what we'll do is, after we break them, we'll chisel them to smooth them out. Can't, like, Tanif Alein Bazal, Rahman, the Pasuk says that the stones of the Mizbeach are not allowed to be touched by iron. So therefore, you can't use iron chisels on them.
How were they evened?
So what they actually did, when they first built the Mizbeach, what they would do is they would dig deep enough to find stones, either they dig deep enough where they can see the soil was never touched, and therefore you know these stones were never touched by iron, and take out natural shaped stones and use them, or they would go, so they'd dive down to the bottom of the sea or whatever, to the bottom of a river or whatever, and then they'd take stones from there. Either way, that what?
No.
That's as far as the rest of the stones of the Harabai. The stones of the Mizbeach, anywhere they're touched by iron topples them. If you have a pasuk by Shlomo HaMelech where it says Makovas Bagaz and Kofri Barzel, that no iron hammers or axes or whatever were heard on the Harabayas, that's because on the Harabayas you're not supposed to be using axe as metal utensils, metal implements at all when you're building it. But here we're talking about even off site the Mizbeach, the other stones of the Beis Mikdash you're allowed to. That's how they had. It was built out of Avnei Gozis, where they're squared off using metal implements. But the Mizbeach, you can't even do that.
Not even outside.
You can't chisel them. Now, okay, in the Mephoshim talk about maybe they could have conceivably used chisels of other metals, but those wouldn't be hard enough to do the job, for one thing. But also, Tosfos talked about earlier in the Masechta, why don't they use a shamir worm? And the answer is because the shamir, even though it can cut through stone, it doesn't necessarily make smooth cuts. It makes rough cuts. And you have a problem. We just said, Avonim Shleimus, they have to be smooth like a shchita knife that your fingernail wouldn't catch in it. That's the question. You have natural stones, even now. You can go out and you can find natural stones that are smooth. Again, they're shaped by water or whatever. So that's what they have to use. But the point is over here. Again, they can't break these stones into smaller pieces because they won't be shlemus. They won't have smooth edges. They can't chisel them afterwards because you can't use metal. Yeah, you can't use iron. Iron specifically. In principle, they could have used other metal, but what are they going to find? They're going to have other metal that's strong enough to chisel stone, Okay. So the question is, fine. So that's why they have to hide them away. Okay. Okay, so the question is still about my Lithuanu Vilishkalinu and Akshayu. Fine, but why don't we say then, why do the Hashmonaim have to hide away these stones forever? Why don't they break them into pieces and then use them for their own purposes? We already established that they were taken over by the Goyim, they belonged to the Goyim, they became objects of Avodah Zarah, now they're Nisbatel, now, okay, you can't use them for Hashem anymore, and you have these practical problems as far as using them for the Mizbeach. Use them for other purposes. Mi loy omer Avoshia, isn't it similar to something that Avoshia said, after the Korban Bayis Sheni, Bikshu lignois kol kesef v'zav shaba olam. The Chachamim thought to hide away, in other words, to say that it's also to use any of the gold or silver in the entire world, nishum kasva v'dav asher Yerushalayim, because mixed in with it is the gold and silver of Yerushalayim, which mostly came from Hekdesh, and of course, being Hekdesh, it would remain also b'ana. And the Gemara interjects before we get to the end of the thing. What do you mean about Avinan Ba? So in the Gemara mentions this in Bechoros. So the Gemara there in Bechoros discusses this. We ask on that, why would there be a question? Yerushalayim have a Ruvia Dalma? Is Yerushalayim most of the world? The majority of gold and silver in Yerushalayim was Hekdesh, fine. But Yerushalayim is not a majority of the world. Any particular bit of gold or silver you find in the world, there's only a small chance that it comes from Yerushalayim and in turn from Hekdesh. Why would we say that all of the gold and silver, why would there even be a Hava Amina, that all the gold and silver in the world should be also? Elo, Amar Abayis, Abayis says, right, what Oshia means is, Bikshu Ligno Dinra Hadridyona Tuyona Shayofa, Mitnetiva Shayushalayim. The Chachamim thought to say that any dinrim of Hadridyona Tuyona that are worn out are also because of the coins of Yerushalayim. What is Hadridyona and Trayona? The Rashi says those are the names of Roman emperors. Trayona is Trajan, Hadridyona is Hadrian. The point is, these are coins that were minted by those Roman emperors who ruled a couple of decades after the Churban. The gold and silver that they used for their coins came from the treasures that were looted from the Beit Mikdash. So therefore, and Shayofa, where they're very worn out, they're old enough, they're so worn down that you're not able to clearly see the images on them. Therefore, there's reason to think that they really came from that time. Tosfos learns a little differently. Tosfos learns that what it is that, first of all, Shayofa might mean over here that actually they took a coin that used to be of mintages from Yerushalayim, even from the time of David and Shlomo, that had their own devices on them, and Adrianus and Chayan in their time took such old coins and they rubbed them down, they rubbed off the old images on them, the old devices to erase the memory of David and Shlomo, and overthrust them with their own things. So that's what we're talking about then. Also, Tosfos gives another explanation that Turyana, Hadrayana, are not the names of Roman emperors. Hadrayana means round, and Turyana means large. So therefore, in other words, these are actual round, large coins, but they're worn out. They're so worn out that they might have at one time had the names of David and Shlomo on them, but now they're so worn out we can't tell, and therefore we have a problem. They might be from Hekdesh. So that's what the Chachamim thought to say is also, until the Chachamim found a pasuk from the Torah that implies that it's mutter, which is namely the pasuk that we said before, that when the Goyim come into the Beis Mikdash, they mechalal it, and now everything in it becomes mutter b'hana, because it now becomes a possession of the Goyim, and it's no longer considered hektish. So the question is, by the same logic, in other words, the same way as we're saying that even coins that we have reason to think came from the treasury of the Beis Mikdash, which should be also b'hana, once the Goyim took them over, they're considered cholin. By the same logic, the stones in the Mizbeach, fine, they can't use them for a new Mizbeach, for the reason that we said. However, they should be mutar b'hana for a hedyon. The answer is hasam lo yishtam shu b'hul gavaya. The difference is, when it comes to the coins, they're not actually used to serve Hashem. They were part of the treasury of the Beis Mikdash. Eventually, they would have been spent on korbanos or what have you, but they weren't actually directly used to serve Hashem. Hacha kibin yishtam shu b'hul gavaya. Here, these actual stones were used to serve Hashem. They were used for the mizbeach. Lav orach ara lishtam shu b'hul gavaya. So it's not decent. It's not derecheretic to use them for mundane, for common purposes. Strictly speaking, it would be allowed, but they didn't feel that it would be the right thing to do, and therefore they hid them away in one of these chambers of lishka Beit Hamikdash. I saw, by the way, an interesting theory once that somebody wrote about this Dinra Hadrayana Turyana Shayapa, that maybe what it is the other way around. We may be told, so Hadrayanus was the emperor during the period when Ben Koziva, Bakorchla, started his revolt. So Turyanus, the Trajan, was the emperor right before that. What happened was, now we know that Ben Koziva fought very successfully for a while against the Romans. And we have various Gemaras and what have you. We have other external evidence that you see that he actually captured Yerushalayim and ruled in it for a period of time. So at that point, they may have started actually trying to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, because the Rambam writes in the Hilchos Melachim that they thought that many of the Chachamim thought he's Mashiach. So in that case, they're starting to gather something. Whatever, it doesn't matter. But the point is that the Chachamim thought he has the criteria to be Mashiach. Rabbi Akiva in particular. So therefore, what would have happened? He starts gathering together material for Hekdesh to be able to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash. What would they have done? They would have taken coins from Trajan, from previous emperor, and from Hadrian, the current emperor, and rub out to get rid of the Avodah Zarah symbols and the names of the emperors on them, and overstripe them with Ben Kuziva's things. So therefore, again, so you have a coin over here that were with the devices of Hadrianus and Turianus rubbed out, maybe one of those coins that was paid, that was used to attempt to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash in Ben Kuziva's time. But in the end, of all the Kurit and Chilor, once the Romans recaptured Yerushalayim, then that's it. It all became Chulin again. I once saw somebody came up with a theory to explain the Gemara that way. Anyway. Yeah. All right. Mishnah says, a guy is able to be mevatel his own Avodah Zarah or somebody else's Avodah Zarah. And we said before in the previous parak, that means another person's Avodah Zarah means even he himself doesn't worship this particular Avodah Zarah. So you have a statue of Merkulus, for example, even another guy who does not worship Merkulus is able to be mevatel it. As long as he worships some Avodah Zarah. It has to be, we said in the previous parak, it has to be that he worships some Avodah Zarah. So, for example, a Muslim is out. And according to some poskim, a Christian would be out also, because not all the Rishonim agree that Christians are Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And it would have to be also that he's Yodei B'Tziv Avodah Zarah. He has to know what Avodah Zarah is all about, like not a kid.
It was the famous example 2 years ago when the Taliban and destroyed Buddhist statues in Afghanistan.
Yeah, well, it was more than 2 years ago, yeah, but whatever. Yeah.
5 years ago?
It was much more than that. It was before September 11th even. Whatever. The point is, yeah. Okay, so the fact remains then, if we assume that these were actual objects of a Desara,
right,
rather than just decoration. No, they could have been decoration. I don't know. Whatever. If we assume they were made L'Shem of a Desara, then you're right. These Taliban blowing them up. The Taliban are not Ovdei Desara. Therefore, the fragments would still be off the banner. Yeah. The Yisrael ain't Mevatel of a Desara. However,
would be
Asher B'Anah? Because
nobody
was Mevatel then. The Yisrael... The scroll ain't mevatel aver es kachavim, shall aver es kachavim. But a yid or a goy who's not over the aver is not able to be mevatel on aver of a goy.
It has to be a goy
who's worshipped aver dezara. That's what we say. Yeah. The Taliban, as bad as they are, they're for Muslims, and according to almost everybody, Muslims are not over the aver dezara. So yeah. Okay. By the way, how you go about being mevatel? So the next mission is going to give some examples that Amar brings. Actually, that it depends. If the goy is doing it, if the goy is doing it l'ritzono, you don't necessarily need an action to be mevatel. Just saying it would be enough. If he's doing it under duress, and you learned in the previous parak, he can force an a goy to be mevatel of a dezara. Then he actually has to do something, as we're going to learn in the next mission, to actually be faithful. Anyway, continues the mission. If a goy is mevatel a particular avodah zarah, automatically with it any meshamshim, any kalim or ornaments or whatever that we use to decorate it or to use in its worship are also batel. On the other hand, bitul meshamshim, if he's mevatel the meshamshim mutarim liyasura. The meshamshim stays or become mutar because he's mevatel them. The idol itself stays also because the idol doesn't go after the meshamshim. The Gemara says, "Masni le Rebbe le Rav Shimon b'Rebbe." Rebbe one time taught his son Rav Shimon the Mishnah as follows. Our Mishnah, like it said in our Mishnah, a goy is able to be mevatel his own avodah zarah or another goy's avodah zarah, but a yid is not able to. Amale, and also a goy is not able to be mevatel a yid's avodah zarah is the point. Amale, so Rav Shimon tells him, Rebbe, shanista lana b'yaldu secha, when you were younger, you taught us the din differently. You taught us then, that a goy is able to be mevatel on avodah zarah of his own or of a yid. And the Gemara interjects before we even finish the question. What do you mean? Yisrael mikom avatla. How is there even a habam? And it's a thing that a Jew is avodah zarah, is able to be batal. B'chavas some batalas. He said before we had the in the sugya before on Omer Aleph about Rabbi Shmuel versus Rabbi Akiva about when an avodah zarah becomes bottle, when an avodah zarah becomes offer, rather. We said that we learned from the word the sombasoser. We learned two things from it. We said that on the one hand, it means that a yid's avodah zarah only becomes offer when it's worshipped. The sombasoser only when he places it in secret to start worshiping it in secret. He's not going to do it in the open. The other thing
in the
is
open, it cannot.
In the open he wouldn't because he knows that the Beis Din would come after.
But if he would.
Obviously, it would be also either way. But the reason why the Pasuk uses the word "b'samlas also" is we're talking about it. So the Pasuk wants to teach us that a yid zavah, according to Rabbi Akiva, a yid zavah zara only becomes also when he worships it. When would he worship it? Practically speaking, he'd be afraid of public opinion, and therefore he'd do it in secret. But we also said, we learned from the Sambas Sosser, that once a yid does worship an avodah zarah, the only thing you can do with it is put it away secretly, because it's tone gnizeh, it becomes also bahanah, and there's nothing you can do with it other than hide it away. So we know that a yid's avodah zarah can never become bottle. What do we mean that Reb Shimon is telling his father, Rebbe, that you taught us that a goy is able to be bottle a yid's avodah zarah? So the answer is, Omer Reb Hillel Breidit of Balas, Reb Hillel Breidit of Balas said, Lo nitzvecha sheyesh lebash shurfus. Yes, but the chiddush of the case that Rebbe is talking about in that first version of his is, suppose that a Jew and a goy together jointly own an avodah zarah. So Rebbe's first version when he was young was that a goy is able to be mevatel of it, even though a yid has part ownership of it, but a goy also has part ownership of it, and therefore he can be mevatel. Now, the Gemara assumes...
The whole thing.
Right. Now, the Gemara assumes that it's not...
Why don't we take the mevatel of goy?
Hold on, that's what we're going to discuss. Wait. Now, the question is, so we have two different versions of what Rebbe taught. When he was younger, he taught that a goy is able to mevatel a yid's avodah zarah, meaning at least if it's part owned by a yid and part by a goy. Our Mishnah, on the other hand, says differently. Now, Rebbe did not answer Reb Shimon and say, you're right, I made a mistake, I think differently. So therefore, the implication is that both of them are valid. So the question is, So what was Rebbe's different svaris? Why did he think one way when he was younger, and why did he change his mind when he was older? What are the respective svaris?
Either change his mind or included another case.
Now, no, we have to, it's obviously different dinim. Again, when he was younger, we said a goy is able to be mevatel and an avodah zarah, that a yid has a certain ownership of, and now he's saying in our Mishnah that he can't. So what was he thinking originally, and what's he thinking now? And the vote is, the Ritva says, that's what it is he would have had two different versions of the Mishnayot, as Reb Meir taught to him. When he was younger, he felt that one of them is more logical to follow. When he got older, he realized the other one is more. So what are the two svaras? So it's like this. But y'all do say, Sava, when Rebbe was younger, he thought, Yisrael adayted erik kechavim polach. When a yid and a goy own an avodah zarah in partnership, and they both worship it, how is it that the yid is worshipping it? He's worshipping it using the das of the goy. He figures, in other words, the way that I'm worshipping it and the extent to which I'm doing it depends on the goy, who is my partner. Because he figures he's not worshipping it independently. Therefore, once the goy is able to mevatel his own portion, the Yisrael Nami Mevatel, then the logic is that he figured in that case, the Yid was only being dragged along by the Goy anyway. Therefore, if the Goy is Mevatel his portion, it can be Mevatel the Yid's portion. Or was it Knusay Sava, but when Rebbe got older, he thought differently. Yisrael Adaita the Nafshe Polach. No, when a Yid worships Avodah Zarah in partnership with the Goy, it's his own das. He's not just depending on what the Goy thinks. Therefore, Ki Mevatel over the Kachav and the Nafshe, so therefore the Goy can maybe can be Mevatel his part. The Yisrael Loi Bottle, but he cannot be Mevatel the Yid's part. Mind you, a number of the Mefarshim asked the question, on the face of it, how should the goy be able to be mevatel any part of it? Up until now, they were partners, meaning every molecule of the avodah zarah is owned jointly by the Yisrael and the goy. There's no particular part that you can point to and say, this belongs to the goy, this belongs to the yid. Maybe afterwards, if they break up their partnership, but that would be a matter of brera. And in general, the thing is daraita, we don't say brera.
Which
50%? Now when the goy is mevatel his part, you're going to say, now when he's mevatel his part, you're going to retroactively say that all this time, the part that he was mevatel is considered to be the part that belonged to him. That's called brera. In things that are Isa, we don't say brera, only in things that are bonum. So you have the Urzarua, in fact, argues that maybe this whole concept that is Drabbanan, and we talked about before, we talked in the previous parak, that maybe technically a Yid Zavodah Zarah should sometimes be able to be bottle, except that Midrabbanan we make a Zeder that not. So he says that the whole concept is Drabbanan, and therefore Midrabbanan you can be Mavatel. You have Breda. The Ramban gives a different answer. Let's say we're talking about to begin with. Their shutfus was, when they first purchased the avodah zarah jointly and started worshipping it, the deal was, let's say, the guy says, I'm going to own everything from the waist down of the avodah zarah, let's say, and you're going to own everything from the waist up. So fine, it was defined to begin with which one owns what. So a few answers. Anyway. Okay, so that was one version of this discussion of, well, not machloitus really, but this discussion, this detail that Rabbi Hillel Brei the Valas said, that Rebbe Din over there about a goy being able to be mevatel a yid of a dezara, that Rabbi Hillel Brei the Valas referred it to the case in our Mishnah, or the case in Rebbe's original version of the Mishnah, that is, that it was talking about where yid and a goy own an avodah zarah, where we said that a goy can be mevatel his own avodah zarah or a yid of a dezara. Then Rabbi Hillel Brei the Valas, according to the first version, referred this din to that. Then there are those who learn Rabbi Hillel Brei the Valas' statement as referring to the sefer of our Mishnah. When it says Yisrael ain't mevatel avodas chacham shel avod chacham, when it says that a yid cannot be mevatel a goy's avodas zarah, so the question we should have to ask is pshita. It's obvious. We know from previous mishnayos that a yid cannot be mevatel a goy's avodas zarah. What is our Mishnah adding to that? So on that, according to the second version, Amar Rav Hillel Brei the Valas, lenitzuchah sheyesh lebashutzus. Yes, but the chiddush of the Mishnah is even if the Yisrael has a partnership in the avodas zarah. Now again, obviously you can't be mevatel the goy's part. But the point is that b'kamash malon, therefore the chiddush of our Mishnah would not be the explicit words that a yid cannot be mevatel. There's no chiddush in it. The chiddush would be the implication of it. Yisrael who delay mevatel the erev kachavim, a Yisrael is not able to be mevatel the goy's portion. Abel erev kachavim the nafshim mevatel, but the goy is able to be mevatel his own portion. So according to this, it comes out his own portion of the avodah zarah. Again, it comes out basically the same as the previous point. But the point is, according to the second version, Rabbi Hillel Brei the Valas, according to the first version, Rabbi Hillel Brei the Valas explaining why Rebbe originally taught that a goy can be mevatel a yid zavah dezara, that we're talking about when a yid has a partnership. According to the second version, Rabbi Hillel Brei the Valas explaining why we need the second part of our Mishnah, that a yid cannot be mevatel a goy zavah dezara, that the chiddush is not those words themselves, but the implication of themselves, that even though the avodah zarah partially belongs to a yid, a goy is able to be mevatel his portion.
That's the chiddush.
And a third version, Ika de Masnila Braisa, then there are those who learn Rav Hillel Brei the Valas' statement as referring not to our Mishnah at all, but rather to a Braisa, where it says, Rav Shimon Memnath Yoyma, Avodis Kachom Shay Yisrael, Eima B'Tela Olamis, a Jew's Avodah Zarah can never be bottled. So on that, we have to ask my Olamis, what's the point of adding the word Olamis, forever, or what does that add? The chiddush is, again, only when a goy has a shurtfus in it. Obviously, if it belongs 100% to a yid, there's no chiddush. But even if a goy has a shurtfus, the kamash malon, therefore, the chiddush would be, like we said before, the Yisrael, a daisad, nafshid polach, that when a yid worships avodah zarah, even though it's in partnership with a goy, he has his own das, his mind, he's not subject to the goy's das, therefore, even when the goy is mevatel his own part, it doesn't help for the yid's part, because the yid, it has its own independent worship of it, and therefore his part can never be
bottled.
So that's what we said before, that's what Rebbe thought was ignose, and according to the third version, Rebbe Hillel Brei the Valas is explaining that's what the Braisa means by saying Olamis. So it comes out practically the same thing, according to all three of them. It's just, what did Rebbe Hillel Brei the Valas say his statement in connection with? What does Chometz have to do with it? We're talking about design. When you sell it to the goy, it's out of your possession. You don't have to be bottled. This is avodah zarah we're talking about. Avodah zarah of a yid can never become bottled. Avodah zarah is a special thing. Yeah, that's not to do with chometz. But chometz that you sell to the goy is not included in the bittul anyway. That's the alphabet that makes the point. You say the mechid of chometz. That is why we have to be very. People have the mistaken impression that it's not so bad if the sale is not so valid, is not so kosher of a yashar al yallah. A big deal. You're being mevatel all your chometz anyway. And the Alter Rebbe explains, no, you're not being mevatel the part that you sold to the goy. Therefore, if it's not a 100% ironclad sale, you own it on Pesach, and you're over on Bal Yerah by Yemotzeh. Therefore, you better make sure the sale is 100% the way it's supposed to be.
Why, if that's the case, if the sale is 100% of what it has to be, how can it revert to the yid's possession after Pesach?
Because what you do is, the rug is, what you do is, I mean, according to the Zelt has the minhag that what you do is you make the rug your agent. For various reasons, we don't do that, or according to the Alter Rebbe, what you actually do is resell the chametz to the goy, and the goy turns around and sells, resell the chametz to the rug, rather, and the rug turns around and sells it to the goy. The point is, the way they work it essentially is, I mean, I'm not up on all the details, but the gist of it is, the goy gives a down payment. The deal is that he has, by the end of Pesach, or shortly after Pesach, whatever, to pay off the rest of it. If he does, then he owns the chometz completely, then he can go to everybody's houses and take it. And if not, if he wants to, if he'd prefer not to consummate the deal, then fine. We'll return him his deposit. We'll give him a little bit extra for his kirfa.
So then the sale is not complete.
No, because at that point, no, it was a complete sale, just like any other time you'd make a down payment on something. The deal is, you made the down payment, the chametz is fully yours, you have the choice, but after Pesach, whether to, at that point, undo it and get back your deposit, or whether to continue with the sale, and you're going to pay the rest of the amount. I've heard of cases, by the way, where if you want some of it during Pesach, and you have to allow him to take it, because it belongs to him. Yeah, and then afterwards, when they figure out the amount, what do you mean, how is it possible? It belongs to him, he put a down payment on it.
That's why
when you sell the chametz, the rav will always ask you where the key is. Either you tell him I'm going to be home for Pesach and I have the key, or you tell him I'm going away for Pesach. The key can be found in such and such a place. Because should the goy want to use some of the stock of chametz during Pesach, he has the right to. He owns it 100%, and therefore he has to
own it after Pesach.
If he wants to pay for it, sure. But the point is, if he wants to use some of it during Pesach, later on, when the Rav buys back the chametz from him, they'll have to make those adjustments. Okay, so during Pesach, wait a minute, if he doesn't want to, then he either pays the whole amount, or he gets back his deposit. You figure out that. When the Rav is going to read over all these things that you say, that you're selling, each person is selling their chametz, they're going to figure out a dollar value that all of this can be estimated to be worth.
Very, very wealthy.
Yeah, it could be. But that's the gist of how it works. Yeah. Actually, by the way, if you look, Reb Zevin has a fascinating discussion of it in Hamorid and Balocha. It's been translated into English also. There's a fascinating discussion of the evolution of this whole matter of Mechiras Chametz.
He says
that actually in the Alter Rebbe's times, the more common thing was not really to sell it through the Rav anyway. The more common thing, and you look in the Alter Rebbe's state of Mechiras Chametz, it was more an individual basis. Each person would make their own deal with the goy. And therefore, eventually, you ended up with problems. You had problems as simple as, for example, you'd forget to sign the contract. Then you have a real problem, and it's not a valid contract. So eventually, in the generation after the Alphabet of Times, eventually it developed it evolved basically like that. In the times of the Mishnah and Gemara, there was no fixed thing, and in general, you'd use up all your comments before Pesach. If it happened, one particular year, you have some left over, then you would sell it to a guy, and there's no, I'm going to buy it back after Pesach on anything, but you sell it to him, and that's it. It's gone. Then eventually, most of the time, you didn't have a lot of chametz, and whatever you did, you'd eat before Pesach, or you'd feed to your animals or whatever. Later on, eventually, in the times when Jews ran inns in Poland, we know all the famous stories with the innkeepers and the paritzim and all that they had. Your whole parnasa depended on mashke, depended on alcohol, which is chametz. So then they had to start formalizing it and making some kind of annual thing where you're going to sell it to the guy and buy it back afterwards. Otherwise, what are you going to do? You can't use it up all before Pesach. So it developed, he describes over there, like four stages historically how it developed. So now, at other times, they were still kind of on stage three, where each person does their own deal with the guy. Later on, nowadays, we're more used to option four. Same thing as they would have in the times of the Gemara. Most of the time, you didn't have much chametz by the time Pesach came. You would time it so that you eat your chametz as much as possible before Pesach. The kalim, okay, you'd clean the kalim as best as possible. Some of them you can kasher. Nowadays, it's somewhat less common to kasher our kalim because we mostly are able to afford new kalim for Pesach. In the olden days, the Gemara and Stockholm, for example, had whole discussions of what kind of kalim exactly you can and can't kasher. The kinds they couldn't kasher, fine, they would have to break or destroy or whatever and buy new ones after Pesach. The other kind, they would kasher and they use them for Pesach. Yeah. Yeah, so you figure out, so the Rav and the Goy will sit down and figure out, obviously they're not going to know down to the exact dollar, but that's it is a lot of money. Then that's why you're not asking the Goy to put it all down. You say all the chametz in Crown Heights and all the kalim and everything might be worth millions of dollars. Obviously, you don't expect the Goy to put up millions of dollars for Pesach. No, it is a real mechira. You have the Goy to put a down payment on it. A down payment now makes it yours, the same way as you put a down payment on a house. You buy a house, you give the bank the entire million or 800,000 or whatever it is nowadays, dollars. No, you put down a down payment and the bank lends you the rest. This is effectively the same thing.
Does he have to be able to have access to get the
Commons? Yeah, absolutely.
What if he settled in a different country and the Commons lives in the country?
that's why you put down on the paper over there. In principle, if the guy wants to get on a plane and fly over there, or if he wants to call up his cousin over there and tell him to, and tell him to go over and get it, he could. Yeah. But he absolutely has the right to. I've heard of cases where a guy was making a party during Pesach, for example, and needed some liquor or something, and he had the rav point him the rav himself stands, obviously, but the guy himself, he did tell the rav, you need to show me the various places, right? Yeah.